Conversations with Maria Menounos, podcast edition. Inspiration.
Is there anything she can't handle? She looks fear in the face day after day, but yet she never runs. She's unbreakable. She's a warrior. She's you.
Growth.
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Community.
These things happen because you have to live your true self in a bigger way.
Featuring the best of Maria Menounos' SiriusXM show with celebrity and life-changing interviews, thoughts on the week, and more. And it's free. All we ask is that you rate, comment, and subscribe on iTunes and tell a friend to subscribe to SiriusXM. Listen to Conversations with Maria Menounos on SiriusXM Stars 109 at 1 p.m. East. And now here's your host, Maria Menounos.
Happy Friday, everybody. You got me feeling emotions. I love Mariah Carey. She never gets old.
Never.
Dimitri and I jam to Mariah Carey like every time we're getting
ready. I know. It's very, very fun to watch on Insta stories. I always feel like I'm in the car with you guys in the back seat, like your non-Greek speaking friend that's just trying to be cool and listening to you guys sing.
I love it. Dimitri's my makeup artist, for those of you who don't know, but he's like my brother and we just have so much fun together and we're jamming to Mariah. I remember when I taught him about Mariah Carey, it was at like one of our first WWE events we were doing. Maybe it was like Royal Rumble or something, WrestleMania. And I was like, you don't know Mariah Carey? He goes, who is this Mariah?
Oh, no way!
Oh, yeah. I taught him everything, guys.
I know.
He didn't speak any English.
He has a notebook in his phone full of things you've taught him.
Oh, the dirty things.
Yeah.
But that wasn't me.
That was funny.
Well, no. Joe Gear.
Oh, no.
Joe Gear taught him all the dirty things. They spent an entire day. I remember being really ill. Actually, you know what? That was probably brain tumor stuff, too. And I didn't know back then, but I was really ill. And I couldn't. I felt like my whole body was shutting down. And I think I remember being in Vegas. I think it was CES. And I was laying down on the couch so ill. And Joe was teaching Dimitri all the dirty sayings in American English. And Dimitri was taking notes in his folder.
Yep. He showed me that folder. He showed me it a couple years ago. And I helped him fill it up a little bit, too.
He was like, what is a Hershey kiss?
Yeah,
and I'm
yeah!
like, ew, what are you? The Hershey squirts and all this gross shit.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
The best ever.
Fisting. Like, any gross thing Joe could come up with. And trust me, it's endless with Joe.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was really funny. So Dimitri was edumacated.
He definitely was. And the best education is Joe Gear.
Yeah.
Gotta say.
Joe Gear. Joe Gear's in town. So it's nice. It's nice to have a security guard in the house.
It is, right?
Yeah. You feel extra safe.
I do. I always feel really safe when Joe's here. It's so funny.
Well, the neighborhood, we're all on a big text exchange and we're all watching over each other with all the burglaries and stuff happening. It was funny. There was some guy scouting our houses and taking pictures and he was sketchy. And now I had his plates run, and he doesn't even have in-state plates. They weren't real California plates. They were fake plates. And so he was definitely sketchy. And everyone on the text exchange goes, Joe Gear's in town. Send Joe outside.
No!
And meanwhile, we were live on the radio, so I couldn't even see the text because I'm doing the radio show. SiriusXM, Channel 109, weekdays at 10 a.m. Pacific. Hope you'll join us.
And nice plug.
So I never even got to see it until it was too late. And so I added Joe to the exchange. I was like, Joe, you got to hunt the bad guys. But yeah, so it's nice that he's here. And
totally.
I'm going to New York in just a moment, basically, to kick off the Rally Healthcare Tour.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, I'm an ambassador for Rally Healthcare.
Yes.
It's one of the projects I'm super proud of because we have a shared goal to help people take control of their health. And they are basically a digital company that helps simplify the healthcare system. So it's an additive to your insurance company. If your company is nice and they really want you to succeed, they have Rally. And Rally will incentivize you to get screened. Like if breast cancer runs in your family, they're going to be like, Ashley, here's a $500 certificate. We want you to go get screened for breast cancer. Or if prostate is something that they're worried about in your family, they'll be like, here's a $1,000 gift certificate. Go get a prostate exam because they know you're not going to want to get a prostate exam. So it's a really, really cool company. And Kevin Hart and I are ambassadors, Melvin Johnson as well. And we go to these Rally Health Fests and we get people moving and excited about taking control of their health and taking that first step. And we're going to do a tour across the country. So I'm going to be in Chicago in August. We're kicking it off in New York tomorrow. And
so cool.
And so I'm going to go home after that and see my parents.
Oh, my gosh.
So I'm super excited about that. My dad's name day was just the other day. I don't know if you know about
name days.
What's
a name day?
So the Greeks believe in name days. So you celebrate the saint you were named after. And so name days are bigger than birthdays in the Greek culture.
Really?
Yeah. So,
you have a name day as well,
awesome.
You're saying?
August 15th.
Wow.
It's the Virgin Mary's
yes.
big holiday. And so... I'm not a virgin, though. And spoiler.
Thanks for clarifying that.
Spoiler. And so anyway, so we're going there. My dad throws his annual name day party. So I'm excited to go.
Wow. Now, what if you're not named after a saint and you're Greek? Do you just like pick a day?
I don't know. You got to be Greek for all the cool stuff, I guess.
No, but what if you're, I mean, like, what if you're Greek, but you didn't have a saint that you're named after?
No, you're always named after a saint.
Oh, you have to be.
Yeah, there's no Apples or like.
There's no Ashley. There's
yeah,
no
there's
Amanda.
No North or
got
any
it.
Of that. Like,
no Chicago.
You're named after, no Chicago. Yeah, you're yeah. named after a saint.
Got it.
That's how it goes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's so did you used to get invited to other Greek kids'
oh,
name days when you were younger?
Yeah, name days are huge.
Oh, my God.
I'm telling you, they're bigger than
that's
birthdays.
So, you get gifts?
Yes.
That is so unfair.
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
So the only thing is that I assumed my dad was having his party on Saturday. He's having it on Sunday. I've already locked us in to go see the Celtics game 7.
That's a really cool name day gift, though.
It's just me and Kevin. Kevin's
oh,
showing
never mind. Never mind.
So, yeah. But, and he's not going to leave his own party. So
no.
Maybe that'll be just the moment I need to escape anyway.
So what do you do on your, like, what have you done in the past on your name days? Anything?
So
cool?
August 15th, Peter and Maria is celebrated. I think Debbie's is the English translation. They also are Thespina. They're also that day. I mean, it's huge festivals that they have. Like for my name day is a really big one. Some of the other ones aren't as big, but it's because it's the Virgin Mary. And so they're huge, huge feasts. I remember being in Greece once. I was 10 and we happened to be there for the celebration. And I looked over this fence. We were playing hide and seek. And I looked over this fence to see if I could hide there. But it dipped real low, like a big gully. And at the bottom was a tree stump. And this guy led a goat over to the tree stump, chopped his head off.
Oh, shit.
And was blowing him so that he could expand the skin and the hair in between there so that he could take off the hair. It was the craziest thing I ever saw in my life. I was scarred. I was so tortured and traumatized.
Wait, is this maybe this is what the root of your love for animals and your need to want to protect them and take care of them?
I think it was even before that.
Yeah.
Though.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I loved animals from like
then that
moment
must have
one.
Been so traumatic
awful.
For you.
It was awful, but also being Greek, think of the trauma. Every year during name days and big
yes.
celebrations, Easter, I'm in the back of my station wagon with a lamb and a pig. Like every year. Twice a year, there's a lamb and a pig, and I'm in the back seat. It's laying next to me. Its eyes are looking at me, and I'm crying in the back seat. That's what it's like to be Greek, guys. You think it's all fun and games, so you're in the back seat of a station wagon with no seatbelt on, by the
right
way, because the seats are down.
Oh, my God. I can't take this right now. What is happening?
I don't know where this
oh my
whole
God.
Podcast just
wait,
went.
Oh, my God. So, wait. Like, last year, what did you do on your name day, for instance? Like, did you have your own specific party?
No. We don't. As an adult, I don't celebrate it anymore. I mean, you know, my parents will call me and say, happy name day. But, you know, like anything, things kind of get a little watered down. Our parents still keep the tradition, and my dad keeps that party because it's a really great excuse for him to see everybody,
yeah.
and it's a lot of fun. So I don't, you know, I don't really do anything.
Okay.
I've always been working. Maybe I'll start.
Yeah. You
Maybe
should.
I'll throw a name
Why don't
day party.
You do that?
Hey, you're right. Next This year. Shit,
yeah,
it's around the corner.
Do it in August. Why not?
Yeah.
August 15th, name day.
Name day party. You're
yes.
all invited.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Get 5 people to subscribe to the podcast, and you too can come to my name day party.
So wait, Kevin, he's Greek now, right? He
yes.
he
converted.
Is it? Converted. Mm-hmm. So does he have a Greek name too that he took
yeah.
on?
So he took on Michalis. His
okay.
dad's name is Michael, so he took on Michalis. I don't know when his name day is.
Got it. So you guys haven't done like name day for him yet, but
nope.
he's going to get one someday.
But maybe we should.
You should.
You're right.
Yeah,
maybe we
that'd
should.
Be nice. I love
so,
it.
Well, you know what? Life. As I'm realizing, I was having this debate with my friend Harula yesterday. You know, she and I are very close with our parents, and we get really sad at the idea that it can be over any minute. And
yep.
I think with everything that's gone on, you know, even interviewing Richard Cohen this week, who you're going to hear on this show, He's an Emmy Award-winning journalist, New York Times bestselling author. He's married to Meredith Vieira. And he wrote this book about his journey finding hope because he's been battling multiple sclerosis. And in the book, he talks about how 117 million people in our country are dealing with chronic illness. And it's really hard to imagine that almost half of our country, that's almost half of our country struggling with chronic illness. And so you just start to think, I did a speech the other day in Vegas for General Electric, and I said, raise your hand if you or someone you love has had cancer. Everyone's hand went up. It was like 1,000 people. And it just struck me and it stuck with me because we really need to live. And we need to work on whatever demons we have or whatever, you know, things that we're dealing with. We got to clean all of that and live and be happy because at any moment that call might come. And how do you want to have lived your life up until then? Because at that moment, you know, now you got a fight ahead of you. And I want to know that I'm living. And so party it on. Bring on the name day parties. Bring on the dog birthday parties. Bring on whatever it takes to live and be happy. And, you know, I've been on this journey for the last probably 3 years with spiritual healers and body healers and all kinds of people to like get me to a good place mentally and emotionally and physically and all of that, even in advance to this whole brain tumor thing. But I really think it's important to figure out why you may not be living, why you may not be happy, and find it, because you don't want to find it when it's too late, or you don't want that moment to come.
Powerful.
You know?
Yeah. It's a lot, because for people that are trying to make it in whatever they're doing and they're working mm-hmm. hard each day, there's that struggle in you that's like, okay, how, you know, don't give yourself too much right now. Like, you don't deserve it yet. You got to work hard. So I've always like been someone that thought about just punish yourself until you get mm-hmm. where you should be, because you need to be more grateful. You need to work harder. Like, you don't deserve this stuff yet. And like, you're right though. At some point you don't know when your life's going to end. And like, I know I have not lived at all. And that's hard to come to that in your mind and really in your heart to know that you have it. Maybe you have, maybe you haven't, but when you come to that realization, it's scary. So it's great that you bring that up, because I think there's a lot of people like me that feel that way.
Yeah. Well, Arianna Huffington, who's actually on the show too, and I just thought of this now. I remember asking her, I had the privilege of honoring her at an event for Brit Week, like 2 weeks ago. And I asked her in the car ride, I said, hey, like, I know your whole new platform, Thrive, is all about, you know, making sure people sleep and, you know, take care of themselves. How do I advise the younger generation, who already some of them pretty much don't want to work? How do I advise the younger generation in terms of how to balance everything, right? You know, because they'll listen to me and my new perspective on life, and maybe they'll want to shift my way, but I'm also almost 40 now and I've achieved everything. And how do I do it? Because I don't want to lead a group of people down the wrong path. And she's like, it's not that they shouldn't work hard. They have to work hard. Absolutely. But you need to get your rest and you need to recharge. So I was pretty good when I did have time off. I always recharged. If I had a weekend off, Kevin and I would sleep the whole weekend away, watch TV and movies. I wasn't out partying. I wasn't out doing any of that stuff. And so I think that's really important, but it was still too much. And it was really rare that I even got that.
Yeah.
So I think the key is, yes, you have to work your butt off. Yes, you have to endear yourself to whoever you're working for, but you have to make sure you're getting quality sleep, and you have to focus on your health, making sure you're getting your doctor's appointments in and stuff like that. You know, because you can't get around work. Like, we have to work.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm still figuring out what the balance is for me in life too, because I feel like as I'm getting older, this is like when things start going wrong with like your parents, obviously. And I'm obviously in the middle of all of that. And friends and people have random heart attacks. And you're just like, wait, okay, I've done everything. I really, you know, this is great. I really just want to be happy now. I really want to focus a little bit more than a little on my happiness. That's right. Why I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to stay for the Celtics game. I normally would rush back and do my show, and I love doing my show, but I'm going to stay. I'm going to have fun with my husband, because that's what I want to do. And I really want to see my parents, even though they're going to be back here a couple days later to be with me. But I just, you know, I'm just spending as much time as I can, because you don't want to look back. I say, think of everyone in your life and think about what you would regret if something was to happen to them right now. So think of people in your life, and if you think of they got a call, you get a call and they're gone, what would you regret right now? Then go do that stuff. Would you regret you didn't spend enough time? Would you regret you put your career over seeing them? Would you regret whatever it is? Would you regret not having patched something up? Whatever it is, go do it, because the odds are not with you. Like, the odds are against you in a sense. So, and why live like that?
Yeah. No, that's very powerful, Maria. And I'm so glad you said that. Yeah. I mean, I definitely, with my parents, it's something where, I'm planning to go see them in July. And
what? You're not allowed. You can't have time off.
Exactly. And I know, and I think about it a lot. I'm like, I don't speak to my dad very often, but my grandmother's dying. My uncle just passed away. Like, I have family that I need to talk to them. I need to be with them. Like, I will regret that. Mm-hmm. And I always take advantage of that. I think that everybody will always be around, and then someone passes away and I'm like, okay, that's not the case. So when you just said that, it's like, it's absolutely true. And I don't think it's living in fear when you do that, because I think some people think of that.
It's actually not forcing you to live in the moment more.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. That's my two cents.
Yeah.
Go enjoy your families this Memorial Day weekend, and your friends, and whoever it is. Maybe your family isn't so great.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, you're going to put your attention in a different place with friends or whatever, but whoever your loved ones are, make sure they know it and make sure you live it. So in the meantime, thanks for living with us here on Conversations with Maria Menounos, the podcast edition. If you would be so kind to help us by rating, commenting, subscribing on iTunes, we would appreciate it. We work really hard to put this out every week for you guys, and we hope you love it. We hope you love it enough that you'll join us on SiriusXM Stars Channel 109 weekdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. We have a lot of fun, and we get a lot of good work done. We like to share a lot of information and help you on your journey as well. If you want to join our newsletter with life-changing tips and tricks and tons of amazing giveaways and more, you can go to mariamenounos.com and sign up there. And yeah, I think that's about it. So today on the show, we have Richard Cohen, who I told you about just a little while ago. He is an Emmy Award-winning journalist. He wrote his newest book, Chasing Hope, A Patient's Deep Dive into Stem Cells, Faith, and the Future. And you will hear a lot about how Richard overcame anger and frustration with his disease. And he had a few different ones that were going on at one time, and how he turned it into hope. I hope you guys enjoy the interview. He is an Emmy Award-winning journalist, 2 times New York Times bestselling author, who was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis at age 25. You know his wife, who is also Emmy Award-winning, from the Today Show, NBC News. And in Richard's latest book, Chasing Hope, A Patient's Deep Dive into Stem Cells, Faith, and Future, he writes about their journey battling MS. Please welcome Richard Cohen and Meredith Vieira.
Hey, hi.
Hi, guys. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You guys calling in from good old Connecticut?
We're calling in from New York.
Westchester in Manhattan.
Where are you guys? Westchester?
We live in Westchester,
and I'm actually in New York City.
Oh, got it. So we're going to have to be very careful not to talk over each other, because I have got you guys in two different locations, it sounds like. So guys, I read the book last night, and Richard, I mean, God bless you. You guys have gone through so much. I want to ask you, obviously, the first question, which is the generic question everyone always wants to know, is why did you feel compelled to write this?
I was intrigued with the whole idea of hope. I've heard that word thrown around for many years by doctors and clergy, and people who, you know, really didn't mean it, anything precise about it. And I was interested in what it meant and whether it was valid, whether one had to have faith to have hope. And I'll tell you, I toyed with the subject for a long time before I actually wrote about it. But I think in this, especially at this time in history, where there's so little hope in this country on many fronts, I think it's a very relevant subject.
So do you have to have faith to have hope?
No. I mean, I interviewed a lot of clergy of all religions, some of whom said hope without religion is an empty hope, and I disagree with that. I think hope is organic. I myself am sort of godless, but I don't think that's important. I really don't. I think you find hope deep inside yourself. I think it grows on its own, and maybe it's in your DNA, but it was a very interesting subject to sort of tear apart.
Meredith, do you have a different opinion, maybe?
Well, I'm not godless, an atheist. I'm also not particularly attached to organized religion, per se. I find my faith more being out in nature, but I certainly attach that longing and that acknowledgement of something greater than myself to the concept of hope. But I also agree with Richard that it is organic. I think each one of us has it within ourselves, but it often gets buried down by the weight of this world around us, and sometimes mm-hmm. it's hard to find and then to hold on to. So it involves a little bit of dredging up at times when things seem particularly bleak. But I do believe it is within us yeah. all, regardless of whether we have faith in a particular greater being or not.
You know, it was startling when I saw this fact come across in the book early on, and it said that 117 million Americans are suffering from chronic illnesses, mm-hmm. and that really makes up almost half of the population of, you know, the United States. When you think about that, how do you guide people who are going through these chronic illnesses, having gone through the journey? How do you have any advice for them?
Geez, I talk to a lot of people who are dealing with various illnesses, and we all talk about personal strength. We talk about resolve. We talk about optimism. I think there are no single answers to that question. I think it's a combination of things. But I think people need to feel good about themselves. I know that's very hard when you're sick, but I think that part of hope is the way you choose to live and your lifestyle. And I think people who look forward to tomorrow, people who think there isn't tomorrow, are going to do a lot better in their lives.
Yeah. If you're just joining, we're chatting with Meredith Vieira and Richard Cohen. Richard, you were diagnosed with MS at 25. Your
Correct.
Dad had it. Your grandmother had it as well, right?
Correct.
Now, I remember reading last night that on your second date with Meredith, you let her in on this diagnosis. And Meredith, he writes that you didn't even flinch. Did you know what MS entailed at that point? Did you know what you were getting into?
Well, my dad's a doctor, so I had certainly heard of MS. Back then it was called the crippler of young adults, because it seemed to strike people in their, you know, in their early adulthood, in their 20s. I didn't know at the time that it's more prevalent among women than men, and also that it doesn't have a predictable course, and there are different forms of MS. Richard is secondary progressive, which means sort of it can be a slow decline, but it is a decline as you live with the disease. So I guess I knew enough that I wasn't afraid. And I didn't know enough that that I could get afraid. You know, if I had looked at some of the possible outcomes, I would have probably been nervous about it. But I've always been of the school of thought, and I've said this before, that, you know, you can get hit by a bus tomorrow. None of us know what is around the corner. You know, so for me, it was, you know, I liked the guy, and I was not going to let that deter me.
But, you know, Maria.
After we started. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. It, when you fight an illness like MS, and by no means only MS, you're really fighting two separate battles. One is the illness itself, and the other is the way people see you. Mm. And the reason I wanted to get it on the table early is to really give Meredith a way out, you know, if she chose that direction. People, and I know this from experience, a lot of people in this country are very uncomfortable with illness. I think people sort of jump to conclusions about us. I think that they believe we are less whole, less capable than other people. That's why it's so hard to deal successfully in the marketplace when you're sick. You know, even though, you know, I would argue that we try harder than most people to do the job. But I don't think we are at peace with illness in this country. I think we sort of look the other way and don't want to deal with it.
I 100% agree with that. And I remember reading that you didn't tell your prospective new bosses at CBS that you were diagnosed with this either. You hid it so that you could get the job. And of course, you went on to win multiple Emmys and be celebrated in such a big way with your work. Had you revealed that you had MS, maybe they wouldn't have hired you, right?
Well, I think that's very true. And I really did think that I had to prove myself. But I'll tell you, many years later, I went out for a drink with Walter Cronkite's longtime executive producer, who I was pretty close to. And now this was years afterwards. And he said to me, almost as a non sequitur, you know, you did the right thing. He said, if you had told me about your illness, I wouldn't have hired you.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, for anyone listening, you were losing your eyesight when you applied for this job. You were having deterioration at that time, right?
That's right.
So you had to work so much harder than everyone else. But this is the part I think that's interesting is not that, you know, you got through it. You contributed so much amazing work to that network that they would not have had if they had been privy to that information.
Well, I think by the time I told them, I was pretty safe and secure in my job. And they just sort of trusted me. I mean, I went off to cover wars in the Middle East and Central America and presidential politics. And I probably was a little bit reckless in getting myself into bad situations. But I always felt that I had to prove something. And it all worked out. And look, I had great years at CBS. And you know, I wish that for everybody, but for people who are ill, it really is a struggle.
Yeah. You know, when
when I first started dating Richard and I would tell people at CBS, nobody knew about his MS. So I would have folks say to me, oh, why would you go out with him? He's such a snob. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, when he walks by me in the hallway, he doesn't even acknowledge me. And it was because he couldn't see the person. You know, couldn't make out the face clearly. So there was this impression that some people had of him that was totally inaccurate, but I wasn't going to blow his cover, so to speak. That was something he had to do for himself. And also Richard used, when you talked about coping, one of the things, Richard, you didn't say was that you used denial, really, as a very powerful coping mechanism.
That's right. You know, denial, denying the certainty of possible outcomes is a way to keep going. You know, you can get up every day and hope for the best and even assume the best and keep going. I feel very bad for people who become victims, you know, who decide that it's all over for them, and they sort of write their own epitaphs. And I don't think you can live that way. I think you just got to go for it, go for the brass ring, do everything you can do, work harder than other people, and you can get there.
Got to keep trying. You know, you talk a lot about the anger that consumed you with this disease, and I found it so moving that you asked your children to be honest with you and that you were going to lay it all out on the table in black and white on this in this book. And they were forthright with you that there were times when you were mean and you were rough. How did that help you move forward in maybe a different way?
Well, it was a reality sandwich that was a little hard to swallow. It, you know, sometimes when people are sick, they become very self-absorbed. And I know I was. You know, when I had cancer, which was really when I hit bottom, I felt like I was the only one in the world who had these problems. And that's when I was writing a essay for the New York Times about this. And when Meredith came to me, as she kept doing, and saying, please don't do these. Don't do this. You know, these are kids who love you and need you. When I finally got the message, I literally sat them down and interviewed them for this piece in the Times. And when they were finally convinced that this was not a trick, they unloaded on me. I mean, you know, Ben started and he said really tough things and Gabe saw the blood under the door and he came in and even Lily, who was like three, came in and just pointed, you know, shook a finger at me. It's really quite sobering to be called out by your own kids.
Yeah, and you talk about how this is a family disease. It's not just you going through it, it's everybody. And so, Meredith, I have to ask, because as I was reading this, I just kept thinking back to, oh gosh, I'm going to get emotional. You've kept such a brave face all these years, and you've had such a sunny, beautiful disposition. I'll never forget how kind you were to me at the Today Show. And I know that you've had to wake up early and work in this ruthless industry under so much duress. How did you do it?
Well, first of all, talk about sunny disposition. That's the definition of you as well. And I think that sort of carries you through, that sort of positive outlook towards life. Or, I mean, I'm sort of a goofball too. And that has helped me along the way. But, you know, we have a good life. And people would say to me, oh, the burden of being a caretaker, caregiver for Rich. And I said, well, we take care of each other. On a day-to-day basis, it didn't feel different than any other family to me. But there would be moments, and particularly when Richard mentioned he had two bouts of cancer. You put that on top of MS. And he really went to a dark place. And he wasn't. His anger was always directed at himself. And that was even harder for all of us because there would be these outbursts because of his frustration and, you know, how much more can a human being handle. And so for the longest time, I tried to put on the front because I felt so bad. I felt so bad for Richard. Like, I'm not the one who has to live this every day. He does. And then it began to sink into me, no, we actually are all living it as a family in our own way. And we're all, as Richard has said, we're all in that hospital bed together. And the only way we can survive as a family is to confront things that might tear us apart. And at one point it was his anger and inability to see it. So that's when I kind of, you know, put down my foot and said, we can't go on like this anymore. And I felt bad because, again, he was the one with the illness, but I knew it was the right thing to do. And I also believe Richard didn't even see it. So once he understood it was going on, then he could acknowledge it and, like he said, talk to the kids directly and change course.
But, you know, as you probably read, our kids who are now between 25 and 30, most of us were in the same place for a change this past summer, and I tape recorded an interview with all of them talking about those years and what it meant to them and whether they felt that they were scarred from it. And correct me if I'm wrong, Meredith, but I thought that they were good-humored. They were funny. They never missed a chance to give me a hard time. And I felt like they came through it as stronger people.
Definitely, and certainly more empathetic people. However, they all live on the West Coast. Read into that what you want.
A lot of sunshine over here to keep you happy. You know,
exactly.
When I have a conflicting report, so I have to believe what's in the book is accurate. But there was an ABC News article that actually quoted you, Meredith, and they were talking about how you guys did get genetic testing before you had kids. But in the book, it says you guys didn't know when you had kids that it was hereditary and it could be passed down to them. Which one is true?
No, well, we were told it was not hereditary. We were told, what's the word they use? Familial.
Familial.
Okay.
I mean, things have changed on that front since we've had kids. I mean, when we went for genetic counseling, well, first of all, Meredith was about 9 months pregnant, so I don't know what they thought we were going to do with it, you know, do about anything.
Yeah.
But genetic counseling then didn't really amount to much. I think we know much more now than we knew then. And it's still not clear that there's a genetic link, though I'm the third person in my family, you know, in a straight line. It's definitely familial and in some cases can be genetic, but there's no biomarker, you know what I mean? There's no test you can take to indicate that you have it or you don't have it. So it's still not clear.
Do you guys worry about the kids? Do the kids worry about themselves?
Oh, I think the kids carried around a real burden. I think one in particular had a bit of a difficult time with it. And they're all past the age where my father and I both got the illness. Now, I don't know what that means.
Well, but, Lily's you know, exactly the age.
And the other thing is I was told by somebody at Harvard that that there's nothing in the literature of it being in four generations.
Got it.
So I've decided to believe that.
I like to believe that, too. I know you guys went to the Vatican. It was funny. I almost went to that stem cell conference this year. And you met Dr. Sadiq. And in the book, you chronicle the journey through the stem cell process. Since the book has been published, have you seen any other changes that are notable since the stem cell treatments that you got?
Well, the problem was my stem cell infusions began four days before I had a life-threatening pulmonary embolism, you know, a blood clot in my lungs. And I was diagnosed with a different, you know, autoimmune skin disease. And he thinks that the assault on my body from those two probably didn't do me any good. So I've had very marginal you know, results. But he and I are talking about joining the phase 3 trial, and nothing has been decided. But
Got it. But
I'm hoping that that happens.
Richard,
but other people who were involved in the trial, Richard, did see results. So
yeah, a couple of people got up from wheelchairs.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it gives so much hope. And I know that's what you were hoping to do with that trial, is to be someone that could give hope to others with this. Do you think, Richard, that there will be a cure in your time?
I think it's more likely that there will be better ways to treat him. I have no reason to think that there will be a cure, which is, I'm hardly an expert. I don't know of any research that's being done that's moved us any closer to that. But I do think that new therapies are being used. And also, I'm extremely hopeful about cell therapy. I think cell therapy is the future of medicine. Mm-hmm. And you name a disease, and I'm telling you, there's a clinical trial, using stem cell or other kinds of cells for therapeutic purposes.
So we have about 2 minutes left in the show. Guys, I want to know, are there any therapies you guys have done for anyone listening with MS that you can quickly explain to people that maybe they should look into?
I wish I could say yes. I don't think of anything.
Like acupuncture hasn't helped, any of those kinds of things, marijuana, nothing?
Well, I've been trying marijuana for years, and I finally said to my neurologist, I've been doing it for years. What's it supposed to do? And he said, well, it's for the pain. And I said, but I don't have any pain. He said, see?
I love that. I've had my mom on marijuana for her brain cancer, and she stayed stress-free at the very least, and we're seeing results in the tumor shrinking too. I'm like, I don't know if it's coming from that officially, but at least she's stress-free, and that's all that matters to me.
Well, I think that's the key word is stress. Any way that you can avoid stress, it is just it inflames the body.
Yeah.
Which causes so many problems. So whether that, to me, it can be as simple as, just finding a place of peace, whether it's in some sort of a yoga class or it's walking or it's reading, whatever it is that grounds you. I think that's so important for everybody. But when you're dealing with illness, sometimes that's hard because you're assaulted every day. So easy to say, probably less easy to do, but I would recommend anything that reduces stress in your life.
Yeah. The book is called Chasing Hope, A Patient's Deep Dive into Stem Cells, Faith, and the Future. Of course, we're on with Richard Cohen, the author, and his wife, Meredith Vieira. Of course, you can find Richard on Twitter at RMC Journeyman. You can find Meredith on Twitter and Instagram at Meredith Vieira. The book is available wherever books are sold, and it's available online as well. And it's a great book. I read it last night. Very detailed. I saw Amy Schumer give you guys a great quote here talking about how her dad has MS. What a perfect time and perfect author for this book. The back of the book is covered in great quotes. So congratulations on it, guys. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing the story. And Richard, thank you for being so honest. It's so helpful for people who are dealing with chronic illnesses to see that real raw journey. So thank you.
Thank you.
Hope that was helpful to you. And up next, you're going to hear Arianna Huffington. She is, of course, the woman behind the Huffington Post. She's also the author of The Sleep Revolution, Transforming Your Life One Night at a Time. She's going to discuss the importance of sleep for your health, why everyone should get 7 to 9 hours of sleep per night, and the shocking negative effects of sleep deprivation. I know you think you know, but I don't think you really know. So stay tuned to find out why someone like Arianna Huffington is on this mission to make sure you get your sleep. Guys, my next guest is an Emmy-nominated writer, a New York Times bestselling author, and co-founder, president, and editor-in-chief of the Pulitzer Prize-winning Huffington Post. Now she's talking all about the power of sleep, and boy, do we need it. Please welcome Arianna Huffington!
Thank you!
Welcome!
And fellow Greek, Maria, forgot that.
My Greek sister.
Greek sister. She does a very good Arianna imitation.
Well, my mom used to get so mad at me because I always imitated her. Maria, why you do this to me? And then later she used to call me from work and then she'd, Maria, will you do it for my friends at work? And I'm like, okay, mom.
Aww.
So then she got to like it. So now she thinks it's funny. But I love impersonating people who have an interesting accent. So it's fun.
But listen, we're here to talk about sleep and we all need that help. And we've talked about it on this show before because I've given my tips for what's helped me because I go through different periods. Like right now, the last couple months I was doing great, right, Nick?
Yeah, you were getting up early, working out.
I was getting up an hour earlier than I needed to and I was working out and I was sleeping early and I felt amazing. And now I've gotten into this lull in the last month where I fall asleep. And I wake up and I think it's morning and it's only 2 hours later.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just keep waking up every hour, every 2 hours, and I'm frustrated.
Okay, I have the answer for
you. What is it?
So
why?
Here's the answer. We have forgotten that, like with children, we need a transition to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is most of us are texting or mm-hmm. answering emails until the last moment. Then we put our phone on our nightstand, we turn off the light and go to sleep. We are exhausted and we fall asleep, mm-hmm. but our brains have not slowed down. And that's what wakes you up with that inner chatter that is completely unproductive in the middle of the night.
So working on and reading your book last night, I wasn't on my phone. I was reading your book.
Reading the book is fine. Here's the thing. Let me just tell you about my transition. In the second part of the book, I have like an enormous amount of things that people can include in their mm-hmm. transition to make it as individual as possible. Mine is very simple. 30 minutes before I'm going to go to sleep, I switch off all my devices and take them out of my bedroom, away from the bedroom.
Yeah, I'm too lazy to get up and get it, so that would work.
But here's the thing. You don't want to get them until you wake up in the morning. So you're not going to go in there in the middle of the night because that's really what gets the brain stimulated.
But how do you wake up without your alarm? And I know you've talked about the alarm problem.
Well, two things. First of all, you can hear it outside your room.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, you can have a great Pottery Barn alarm clock, analog alarm clock, $32, beautiful looking on your nightstand. The important thing is that if you get enough sleep, you'll wake up without an alarm. So mm-hmm. the alarm is there as a protection,
mm-hmm.
but it's ideal not to wake up in a fight or flight mode, mm-hmm. which is what the alarm is. So once I power down my devices and charge them outside my bedroom, I have a hot bath. If you don't like baths, have a hot shower. Water is like a purification ritual. It washes away the day. It slows down your brain. It prepares you to really recharge. I'm hypnotizing you now, Maria.
I love it. Wait, so you're doing that in the morning?
No. I'm talking about at night, okay. Like before you go to sleep. So this is the transition ritual. 30 minutes before you go to sleep.
Because I sleep better when I go into my hot tub at night.
Exactly, because it's not really just for your brain. It's really both for your brain and for your muscles and for all the stress to be washed away. Then I wear dedicated sleep clothes. You know, I don't sleep in the same stuff that I wear to the gym. I love actually rekindling the romance with sleep and having beautiful lingerie, something that is welcoming, that draws you.
So my big Mickey Mouse sweatshirt and my big, ugly Victoria's Secret sweatpants aren't good.
It's okay. If you don't wear them to work or to the gym, that's fine. You know, just dedicated to sleep.
Okay.
And then only reading physical books. And then if you are reading The Sleep Revolution and if you fall asleep while reading it, I will consider it a personal victory.
You know, what's funny is at some point I'm like, I'm reading and she keeps saying, you've got to get your sleep. You got to get your sleep. I'm like, but I've got to be ready for this interview. And then finally I was like, okay, you've read enough. And she's going to really appreciate that you're rested in the morning.
Exactly.
And funny.
Also, I have a meditation that my sister Gabi, who is here because she's a big fan of yours, so she came with me. She's read it, and it's on the book website, arianahuffington.com, and you can download it. It's free. And you can hear that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you wake up in the middle of the night, it will help put you back to sleep in a natural way.
Okay, I'm going to try it.
One final thing. Give the closing scene of the night to the things you're grateful for from the day.
Mm.
You know, every day is a mixture, right, of good mm-hmm. things and bad things. So we can decide what is going to be the note on which we end our day.
Not Game of Thrones.
Make it not Game of Thrones. Not Game of Thrones.
I had to stop watching violent television
at
night.
Exactly. That's terrible. It's not the right time to watch it.
Yeah.
You know, not an argument that you had with your fiancé or your boss or anybody.
Up. Whoa.
Wow. That is
the phone just got violent with us.
What do you think about my ringtone?
It was a little scary.
It's bells. It's church bells.
Oh, no. I thought it was like Game of Thrones. I didn't know. It frightened me.
But I turned it off. Don't worry, guys. So that way, if you wake up in the middle of the night, you are less likely to move into worries and negative fantasies and all the things that are that make you anxious.
How many hours of sleep do you get now?
I get 8 hours, 95% of the time. You know, there are always things that happen, like a flight is delayed. You have to get up super early.
Yeah, there's things.
It's never going to be.
But do you think sleep is individual to each person? Does someone need 9 and another need 10 and you need 8? Like, is it individual?
So, it's conclusive science here. Unless you have a genetic mutation, which means you can do great on 4 to 5 hours, and about 1% of the population does, the vast majority of us need 7 to 9 hours. Where we are in that spectrum is individual. My sweet spot is 8. Yours could be 7 or it could be 9.
Mm-hmm.
While we can overeat, we cannot oversleep. Like our body wakes us up naturally when we are rested. Unless we are severely depressed or narcoleptic, you don't have to worry about oversleeping.
Yeah. I like between 8 and 9. I feel like I'm so happy. But I have to ask, because you're having this this breakthrough so far into your career where you've achieved so much. And I know that when you're starting out, you have to sacrifice, right? So we have to sacrifice somewhere. And to me, I always say sacrifice in your personal life in terms of like partying and all that, and put it all into your work. And I've had those mottos of like, you know, people put on their Pinterest board little things like, while you're sleeping, I'm working.
Yeah.
And we all have that, like, you have to work your butt off to succeed. And so do you feel like if you had this breakthrough, or if you had used this, I'm going to get my 8 hours no matter what, back then, you would be where you are today?
I would have done everything I've done and maybe more. With more joy, with less damage to my health and my relationships. And this is absolutely unequivocally said by me, because if you look at the science, Maria, we are living under this delusion that we are more productive when we sacrifice sleep, but we are not, because we show up at work
cranky,
with a cognitive impairment, as the scientists call it, the equivalent of being drunk. We show up at 40 or 60% of capacity instead of 100% of capacity. Our most creative ideas don't come when we are exhausted. We can do transactional things, you know, answer emails, pay bills. But when it comes to the big things, the good decisions that are transformational, that are really take us to the next level in our careers, the more connected we are with our wisdom, with our confidence, the more likely we are to be effective. We are right now where we were with smoking in the 1960s. You know, the science was in that tobacco was killing us, but people still considered smoking glamorous. Doctors were advertising cigarettes on television, Maria, in the 1960s. I mean, if you go back and look at some of these ads, you're going to be stunned. And we're in the same place with sleep deprivation. Sleep deprivation is still considered glamorous. There are still people, as you said, who brag about how little sleep they get. I had dinner with a guy recently who bragged that he had only gotten 4 hours sleep the night before, and I wanted to say to him, but I didn't, you know what, if you had gotten 5, this dinner would have been a lot more interesting.
But it's true. And I think that, you know, we, like, I've had that kind of epiphany in the last, let's say, 6 months, where I'm like, you know what? I am unhappy not getting sleep.
Yeah.
And I'm not as productive. I'm going through the motions. I'm showing up to these meetings and I'm not fully there. The only time I'm fully somewhere is when I have no other distractions and I've gotten my rest, or I'm on vacation. When I go on vacation, I would have all the breakthroughs in the world. Well, duh, because I'm sleeping and I'm just relaxing. And so I was like, how do I get more of that into my life? So I was going through IVF in the last couple of months, and I was like, I'm cutting everything out other than my actual physical jobs where I'm going. When I'm done with those, I'm going home. I'm going to have dinner at home and I'm going to see my fiance and my dogs. And it's made me so much happier.
That's amazing.
I felt guilty for a while.
But you know, now that you're seeing how you show up in your life, you know, fully present with more joy, more vitality, you can help so many people. That's what I'm excited about. So many people who love and admire you can say, hey, Maria had that epiphany. I can have that epiphany too.
Yeah, but I would be scared to advise a young person to not sacrifice
but
in the beginning.
But if you ask them to read the science...
Because I wouldn't go back and change it either because I'd be too scared.
But here's the thing. That's because we have not yet convinced ourselves. We have not changed our minds about how sleep makes us more productive. That mm-hmm. is really key. And that's why I have this whole section on science. To show you the way the science on tobacco showed us that tobacco was killing us, the science can show you how it makes you less creative, less productive, and less likely to achieve your goals. I mean, just to give you one stat, we are now losing 11 days in productivity per person, even though we're working longer hours than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
And what is amazing now is that we're living in this period of transition where the culture is shifting. We did, for example, a college tour to reach to millennials. 350 colleges. I didn't go to all of them.
Wow.
To basically convince them through the science, through a partnership with many brands that gave them eye masks and lavender drops.
I use them every night.
All the things that can help you get a good night's sleep, to convince them that all the things that our culture has made us believe, like I'll sleep when I'm dead, you snooze, you lose.
Yeah. Simply, my favorite sayings in life.
You know what I'm saying? They are simply false.
Yeah.
And it's not surprising that you and I, you know, believed them because so many people we admired used to talk like that.
I honestly, up until like the last couple months, I feel guilty if I'm not a workaholic and I'm not working longer hours because I think, well, there are agents out there who are working till 11 p.m. having business meetings and I'm in bed right now. How dare I think I work hard? I swear.
Here's the thing. Working smart is really the key. And working hard when you're working, you know, it's more important to get enough sleep. And then when you're working, be there 100% instead of 60% and being distracted and not being fully present. And, you know, the people who've achieved the most always make time for themselves to unplug and recharge. Steve Jobs talked about how his best ideas came after Zen meditation. Bill Gates would famously take 3 weeks off without devices or laptops or anything and go to a cabin in a mountain to think. That's where you get your best ideas.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. And that's why it's so fitting that you're here today, where I feel like I'm kind of having that breakthrough myself, too. And then reading this, it was making so much sense because I'll tell you, I had a meeting on Saturday, or I had a breakthrough this week where there was a project that I've had on the table for the last, let's say, 3 years, and I couldn't get to it. And it was something that I really was passionate about and wanted to do, and I gave up, and I kind of gave up on hope on a lot of things. I was like, I'm just so tired. And I had this moment where it was represented to me, and I thought, I know exactly what to do with this now. And oh my God, I had the most unbelievable meeting Saturday where there was just this new passion and this giant came out of me that just existed maybe when I was like 15, but like I've lost along the way. And I'm like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. This is my calling. This is where I'm supposed to be. And this is going to allow me the platform to help the people that I've always wanted to help and to do the things that I've always wanted to do in a different way than what I had initially seen my path being, you know, all these years. And none of that would have come had I not rested. I took my first kind of long vacation 2 weeks ago or last week. I was gone for a week and a half. Can you believe it? A whole week and a half.
I'm so proud of
you. It was major.
I love that.
But it's true. You need your rest.
What you're saying is so profound and moving because what you are saying is that you could continue doing what you are doing and filling your days and nights and being always busy, or if you have another dream, you can actually give it some energy and make it happen. And that's really true in all our lives. We have the opportunity to kind of reimagine our lives at every moment, but only when we are not running on empty. Yeah. When we're not running on empty, we can only just do whatever is ahead of us in a transactional way.
Absolutely.
It's really what they tell us on airplanes, you know, put your own oxygen mask first.
Mm-hmm.
And then we are more effective at everything else we're doing.
It's true. So I've seen it work in terms of in that way, right? Where you can put everything aside and then the things will come to you, right? Where like I've been of the mindset of willing everything to happen. Things will come to you, right? But there's so many health benefits to sleep that you talk about in the book. And in particular, you talk about depression, anxiety, which I've had severe anxiety. I feel like very untreated for years because I've wanted to deny my anxiety. And, you know, weight issues. So talk to me about all of the studies that you've included in this book.
So the science about the impact of sleep deprivation on our health is so stunning, because right now we've convinced the world that exercise and nutrition are important. Whether people do it or not, mm-hmm. they know they matter. But the first pillar is sleep. So these are sort of the three legs of the stool: sleep, nutrition, exercise. A lot of people put the alarm on and wake up sleep deprived to go to the gym. This is the worst thing you can do. Even if all you care about is your weight,
mm-hmm.
When you are sleep deprived, the hormones that are activated in us make us crave sweets and carbs. So if you're sleep deprived, sleep in, and then you can figure out your exercise.
I say it all the time. I won't work out if I'm tired. Yeah. I just would rather sleep because I know it's better for my body. But when you think about it, when you're sick, what do they tell you to do?
Exactly.
Sleep, get your rest. That's what heals you.
And also, when you talk about productivity, when we are run down, we're much more likely to get sick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are viruses around us all the time. Whether we succumb to a virus or not depends on how strong our immune system is. And our immune system is compromised when we are sleep deprived. All the inflammatory markers that are the precursors of disease become higher. And bottom line, every aspect of our health is affected, from cancer and heart disease, because heart disease is so tied to hypertension. And when we're sleep deprived, we metabolize stress differently. You know, when I'm fully recharged, you know, when something bad happens during the day, and I've never had a day when everything went my way,
mm-hmm.
I just take it in my stride. It's no big deal. When I'm sleep deprived, I overreact. I take it personally. It becomes like a vicious cycle. Then what you said about anxiety and depression, they have now examined, you know, the epidemic of mental health disease in colleges with anxiety and depression. Mm-hmm. And in over 80% of instances, they have found sleep deprivation at the foundation of it. And so it's kind of incredible that we have something which is available to us
for free. Yeah.
And yet we don't use it. And also that we have so many easy ways to actually make it easy for us to sleep instead of immediately going to a sleeping pill, because we can't be bothered to have a hot bath or to have a lavender tea or to lower the lights and darken our rooms and lower the temperature and all the things.
The
temperature is key.
That's what happened to me last night. We didn't turn on the AC. That's what happened to me.
And then it wakes you up.
Yeah.
Because your body
is hot.
It's hot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's metabolizing, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh my God. That's
And then also the other thing, which is kind of the mystery of sleep that I love, is that when I'm not sleep deprived, I'm more likely to remember my dreams.
Mm. And that's such saw that you journal your dreams.
Yes. I have a journal and a light with a pen with a flashlight. So if you wake up and you want to write them down, you don't have to wake up Kevin. Although he's probably awake typing away. We have to stop that, tell him.
Honey.
I have to have a consultation with him.
Well, you know about the man curtain, right? Did you ever hear? We talked about it here. He built a curtain he drilled into my very expensive bed. Do you like how I call it my expensive bed? Because if it was up to him, he wouldn't have bought an expensive bed.
Yes.
So it's my expensive bed. He drilled into my bed poles and he hangs his man curtain up when he wants to work at night.
That's okay. Amazing. And then you can't see the light.
Well, I see a little reflection up top, so he needs to modify his invention. But I think he could make billions of dollars off of this for all of the men across the country that want to work while their girlfriends are sleeping.
I know. You know, it's sleeping together. I have a whole section in the book about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because here's the thing. We need to make it acceptable for people to have a beautiful second bedroom for those nights when one of you needs to get a good night's sleep mm-hmm. because you have to get up early and the other person can't go to sleep or wants to work or whatever. Not to make the second bedroom like a punishment, you know, you go sleep somewhere else, but make it just as beautiful as the first bedroom mm-hmm. and just as inviting. Because you know what? It's kind of another illusion that you have to sleep together every night because otherwise it means that you don't love each other mm-hmm. or you're not having sex. Rubbish. You know, have sex and then go to the other bedroom.
Yeah.
European aristocracy did that all the time.
I know. Well, you know, he has many bedrooms to go to. He just wants to stay in this one.
I get
it. Then I was forced to have to move. And then I don't have my things. And then I'm lugging stuff back and forth. It's just not right. But he hasn't done it in a while. I think we shamed him on this show enough that he hasn't done it. Thank God. And honey, please don't get any ideas. But, you know, you also tied erectile dysfunction.
Yes.
To sleep. Now, think about all of the pills surrounding sleep. You've got
yeah.
the Ambiens of the world for sleep, Advil PMs and Tylenol PMs. And then you've got Viagra maybe potentially connected to this because erectile dysfunction is linked to
sleep deprivation.
Sleep deprivation.
And so is reduced sperm count if you're trying to get pregnant.
Well, hey, maybe that's what's not helped us as well because Kevin doesn't sleep. He listens to podcasts every night.
Okay, so tell him to forget about podcasts. He can listen to meditations. I have 12 of my favorites in an appendix mm-hmm. in the book. He can try them and I promise him that at least one of them will put him to sleep. He'll never be able to hear the end of it. But the key here is to recognize that all these things that we think we need to take a pill for, like sleeping or getting it up, are natural if our bodies are not exhausted.
Yeah.
So I find it stunning that America and New Zealand are now the only two countries that allow advertising of sleeping pills on TV. And you have all these like beautiful people frolicking in fields while a cheerful, you know, a cheerful
You're
voice
right.
reads a list of terrifying side effects. Like you may get up while mm-hmm. asleep and get in your car and drive and have no memory of it in the morning.
Yeah.
I mean, can you think of anything more terrifying? I have all these stories of people who walk up in their pajamas in a jail cell because they run over people. I mean, this horrible story of one of the people this woman ran over was an 18-month-old baby that will have brain damage on his life. And if you know that this may happen, even if the chances are small,
yeah,
would you take that risk?
No, but you even say that your blood alcohol content is different with sleep deprivation, so you could appear like a drunk driver too.
Oh, absolutely. It's totally connected. You know, the blood, if you really look at your blood levels when you're sleep deprived or drunk, after 24 hours of not sleeping, they're identical.
Isn't that unbelievable? So think about how many sleep deprived people will go out for drinks, have a drink, even just one drink, and then drive. You're drunk.
Well, we
officially.
Just launched a campaign against drowsy driving because while deaths and crashes from drunk driving are going down because there's more awareness, they're going up when it comes to drowsy driving. Mm-hmm. Last year, 8,000 people died because of drowsy driving.
I fell asleep at the wheel.
You did.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it terrifying?
Mm-hmm. I had a dream while I was asleep driving.
Oh, my God.
And woke up and saw Kevin next to me. We were making a movie in Connecticut, and I hadn't slept the whole month, like no sleep at all.
And you were driving.
And I was driving the lead car of a caravan of cars, and I completely fell asleep. God just completely blessed us and took care of us because I fell asleep, had a dream, and woke up and saw Kevin next to me sleeping. Not unbelievable.
Wow, that is unbelievable. But did that actually scare you enough not to do it anymore?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because it can happen in a second mm-hmm. and your life can change in a second. We did a PSA yep. with a man who is now a paraplegic in his 20s. Again, just It's called microsleep.
Yep.
It doesn't have to be as long as it sounds. Yours might have been. It can be literally a second.
Yeah. Well, look, if you look at your radio and you change the dial on your radio, just in one split second, you can get into an accident.
Yes, exactly.
And you're awake. So it's very dangerous.
Raising awareness of that is absolutely critical. And recognizing that it's not macho to say, yeah, I'm tired, but I'm going to drink a coffee or a Coke and I'm going to power through. Do mm-hmm. not power through. We now have all this technologies available. You can call an Uber.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a friend drive. It's not worth it.
Pull over and take a nap.
Pull over and take
That's
a nap.
That's why I like transcendental meditation
mm-hmm.
because it does recharge you in a way where you got sleep in a sense, right? I mean, I don't know the exact way to describe it, but I know that if I do my TM, it refreshes me. Sometimes
Absolutely.
It prepares me right for bed as well,
yes.
and I float right into sleep.
Absolutely. It's a little bit, as well as all the other impacts it can have, it's like having a nap. And we have all the science that shows that a restorative nap of 20 minutes can really reset your day.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say if even with the best intentions, you didn't get all the sleep you needed the night before, just try and get a nap as soon as you can. Mm-hmm. At the Huffington Post, we have two nap rooms. They're perpetually full now.
I love that.
And it's so much better than going for a fifth cup of coffee mm-hmm. or a third donut or whatever it is that we do to power through in
the
afternoon.
All the acid from the coffee. Have you been to Germany and the airport and seen the nap cabs?
Yes.
You need
Amazing.
To, you are the one that can do this. You need to bring them to our country.
Well, you know what? We brought a nap pods. At the JetBlue terminal at JFK.
Oh, really?
Yes, we opened them together. We partnered with JetBlue. And we also took over a flight from New York to Las Vegas to educate the travelers about it. We partnered with the Marriott Hotel. And now they have over 2 million cards that they printed with my 8 top sleep tips. And mm-hmm. they put them on pillows at Marriott's around the country. What is fascinating is that now we see brands recognizing that sleep mm-hmm. can be a competitive advantage.
Yeah, well, when you go to the Trump Hotel in New York, you can order any kind of pillow you want with any scent. Most hotels now, and I saw in your appendix, you have different hotels
yes.
and the different beddings and,
right,
and things
the
that they do.
Benjamin Hotel in New York will give you a call to remind you that it's time to go to sleep instead of a wake-up call.
Oh, I like that.
It's a kind of time to power down call. So the culture is changing.
Yeah,
and
well, you're
think,
helping to change it,
well,
that's for sure.
Well, all we are doing with this conversation, with what you are saying about your own experience, we are accelerating a change.
Yeah. Guys, the book is called The Sleep Revolution, Transforming Your Life One Night at a Time. It's amazing, and it will help change your life. I'm telling you, sleep has changed my life, and I've only just begun because I haven't been as disciplined about it as I could even be. Because on Saturday night, I only got 6 hours. And that was a Saturday night. So I should have
right,
gotten
but
my
no
eight, judgment. 8 hours. But I slept the rest of the day.
It's a long game.
It's a long game. Guys, Ariana, thank you so much for joining us. And congratulations on the book and all of your amazing accomplishments.
Thanks for listening to our free Conversations with Maria Menounos podcast edition. Follow us at Maria Menounos, at SiriusXM Stars, at Miss Ashley Daniels, at Christy Reports. And remember, everyone, be nice people, make good choices, and be present.